Blog Talk Radio.
Narration, take one. Take two, three.
When James was 4 years old, his older sister disappeared while making a documentary near the town of Burkittsville, Maryland.
The final moments of it showed her going into a house, seemingly within the Black Hills Forest. That area was extensively searched by police and FBI, but they could find no evidence of an existing house in those woods. For as long as I've been friends with James, he's wondered what happened to her. His continued search to find closure and answers to his sister's disappearance is the subject of this documentary.
Oh, the Blair Witch is back. Welcome everybody to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hodson, and then we just heard of some new horror movie, Blair Witch, which obviously is a sequel to the original film, which I believe came out in 2000 or 1999. I can't remember which year it was. But what I do remember is how much it scared the crap out of me, which does not happen because I am famously not impressed by most horror movies. I should have known, which was kind of perfect timing, if you think about it. There was a lot of fear running through the country during that time because of the coming of the film. But the original Blair Witch Project scared the crap out of me, or at least it was more effective than most any horror I've seen in recent memory that built up tension without the need for gore or lame jump scares or anything like that. It was about actual emotional terror, you know, the building up of dread within. And it was amazing the way they were able to do that. And, of course, it introduced the found footage genre that most people despise today and can't really blame them. And over to that. But the original Blair Witch Project was groundbreaking, whether we like it or not. And I was a big admirer of that film. Now, of course, everybody remembers the atrocious sequel that came out, I think, a year later, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2, which had practically no connection to the original movie, or at least a really lame one. And it was a total studio produced. So it just didn't feel the same. So now you've got 17 years later, this new film, Blair Witch, from director Adam Wingard, who is a great director. I did The Guest and some other stuff too. But he is one of today's top horror mavens. So it's a big deal. And it did some clever marketing on this one, which we'll talk about a little bit in just a few minutes. We'll talk about what they did, how they pulled this one off, mostly secret. We'll talk about that when Matthew Razak joins us in just a moment. Not only are we going to talk about Blair Witch, but we're going to go into Sully, starring Tom Hanks, directed by Clint Eastwood. The film about Chesley Sully Sullenberger, the pilot who made that miraculous water landing on the Hudson River a few years ago, became a national hero. Came out last week. We didn't have a show last week, and I want to talk about it only because there's been a lot of talk about Tom Hanks as a potential Oscar contender, and I want to discuss that as well, what his prospects are. So we'll get into that. Plus news, some news that caught my eye this week about the new X-Men movie, Jurassic World 2, and the Predator sequel. So, and a very surprising action movie. That will center on somebody that you probably think shouldn't be in an action movie. So we'll get into that as well. Plus, it's Blu-ray and DVD. So we got a busy hour. So I want to just go ahead and jump right into this by bringing in my buddy, Matt Razak of Flixus.com. What's up, Matt?
Hey,
How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a pretty good week.
Yeah?
Got to check out Blair Witch, and, well, aside from my day job disappearing, but...
yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I was sorry to hear that. But you'll come out okay, though. You'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And worst comes to worst, you can become one of the guards at our screenings. And
yeah, well, there's a ton of high paying film critic jobs out there, right? Where I can just review movies.
Oh yeah,
those
jobs aren't going anywhere. They're staying right where they are. But the thing about it, though, if you become a guard for the screenings, you'll still be able to see the movies and review them.
Yeah, and I get to use the night vision camera. Yeah,
and you'll get paid.
That's probably the best idea yet.
If you did that, you would be one of the very few that get paid to watch movies in those rooms. Because practically nobody is.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, you'd probably be the highest paid person in there. Think it over.
That sounds interesting,
but yeah,
now that you say it.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't sound so bad anymore, does it? You did mention Blair Witch. You had a chance to see that. Did you see Snowden also?
No, I missed Snowden. The
Miss Snowden.
Screening got messed up this week. I don't know if you heard about that, but yeah, I couldn't get in.
No. What happened?
The screening people didn't get the passes secured, and all the Snowden screenings were sold out. So the critics showed up, and they were like, no, we don't have any seats, and we don't know what you're talking about, press people. So, yeah.
Oh, man, that sucks. I thought, because I know Allied had sent out the email about it, but I ignored it because I was already talking to Fathom directly about it. I thought Fathom had emailed everybody about that.
No, yeah. I showed up, and they said there were no seats left, so...
Because I knew if I went through Allied, because they even said in their email that nothing was guaranteed, you know, going through.
Right.
Them.
Yeah.
But I thought that Fathom had emailed like all of WAFCA about it, not just me and I don't know who else, because I went to Tyson's and the place was barely half full. And
really?
There. I just walked up and I showed them my paper, my confirmation from Fathom rep. And they just let me in. I was like, why are there more critics here? I thought there would be.
Huh. Oh, I see. I should have rolled out to Tyson's.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so we won't talk about Snowden anyway. We're going to talk about Blair Witch and Sully. Now, you did mention that you saw Blair Witch, and that was the lead-in. They did some fairly clever marketing on this one, keeping it in secret. By developing it as a movie called The Force, which I remember when the trailer for it came out, and I said, God, this looks generic as shit. This looks really, really boring.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so I kind of ignored it. And then at Comic-Con, it was revealed that it was actually Blair Witch, a sequel to the Blair Witch Project. However, I have to say, and I put this in my review, Matt, that other than the name change, I mean, the connection to Blair Witch and all that, pretty generic, horror movie to me. It's like the only thing that makes it stand out is the connection to Blair Witch.
Yeah, I pretty much agree entirely. And I think that, you know, the marketing, the name switch was almost, because the original, half of the original Blair Witch was the marketing and the, like, is this real, is this not real thing. And so this marketing trick seemed
so
much, much in line with that. Like a desperate attempt to be like,
found footage was so new, people didn't understand.
Right,
people didn't
exactly
understand what was real, what wasn't. They had that going for it.
So in this case, you know, it felt like we're trying to do that again. We're trying to get a different marketing ploy out there. And so, but I did have hopes for it, just because the director is so good. The Guest and You're Next are two of my favorite films of the
Me
last
too.
10 years probably. Yeah, they're legit. And what he's really good at is subverting genre conventions, but especially in You're Next. And so I heard, you know, he's doing a found footage film, and I was like, that's awesome, because he's going to do something different. He's going to, you know, flip the genre on its head. And then it turns out it's kind of just a regular old found footage film. It's not a bad one, but it's nothing special, you know? It wasn't mind-blowingly good. And there were moments that were interesting and well done. There's a tunnel scene that's in the trailer that was eerie and claustrophobic.
Tunnel scene is fantastic. I was there with my buddy Ronnie, and like me, he's claustrophobic. And there's the tunnel scene at the end where one of the characters trying to escape had my heart racing because I was starting to feel uncomfortable in my seat. Like, I was like, I kind of want to get out of here right now. I kind of want to leave.
It was one of those things where it got to the end and I was like, now it's picking. Oh, it's over.
And you're sitting there, you're watching, and I was watching scenes like, this is the kind of thing I expected from Wingard throughout the entire movie, feeling like feeling uncomfortable. But instead, what we get is a pretty much a standard horror movie, the kind of movie that was ridiculed in The Cabin in the Woods. You know, the kind of thing that we all said after that movie, we shouldn't see any more movies like this. That's exactly what this is. Now, the film takes place some years later, and it follows the brother of Heather Donahue, who was one of the three missing in the original movie. I used to have a thing for Heather Donahue. Was it Heather McDonald? I think it may have been Heather McDonald.
Yeah.
Whatever, Heather. I had a thing for her back then. He's the brother of Heather. And he's wanting to figure out what happened to his sister who disappeared in the forest of Burkittsville, Maryland, all those years ago. And he is enticed into looking for her at a YouTube video that was put up that proclaims to be from that day and from that location. It seems to have an image of the Blair Witch on it, and a girl who just happens to be a documentarian, which is, you know, convenient, I guess. His best buddy and his girlfriend, and they go out there and they encounter a couple of locals who help them out. And of course, weird shit starts happening along the way. People start disappearing. It's kind of the same pattern as the original movie. But what I liked about the first one was that, one, it only had three people, which meant that the tension within it was kind of built up amongst the three of them. You know, it was kind of concentrated within those three people. But also, they were out there practically naked. I'm talking about clothing-wise, but all they really had was a map, like a compass, and one single camera. These guys came out there with a freaking drone. A bunch of other gadgets.
Right.
To me, it just made the whole thing feel kind of impersonal and kind of cold, and I was like, it's not doing anything for me.
You know, it felt like they were trying to say, well, now it's all up to date, and look, they've got all this technology built in, but that made it feel less. I mean, I almost wonder why they didn't do it just place it 3 years after, and then they could have made a better found footage film. One of the problems with found footage films now is that you can record everything in HD, and it all looks super clean like a regular movie.
Right.
So, you know, half the horror of a found footage film is that sort of shaky camera, grainy thing. So all that new technology kind of ruins it. And I think they felt that partially because they had a guy with a DV camera for some of it. And, you know, those recordings really kind of brought you back to what made found footage so good. And what makes – I rewatched The Blair Witch, the original, before the movie, and I was like, you know what, this is a really tense, if somewhat standard by today, you know, when it came out as revolutionary, but somewhat standard by today's, you know, genre of found footage movie. And it's because of all those things, you know, the low tech and the fact that it just has this feeling of people holding cameras in the woods, not, you know, people with tiny earpieces recording things.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And one thing that I think missing in this one was that internal conflict that develops between all the characters. One of the things that made the first one so great was that, you know, a lot of this stuff that was going on was was made worse by the things those three people did to one another. Not, you know, like one guy would get frustrated and lose the map, and the anger that that would cause within the other people, and sort of they would all become disgruntled with one another, which made every situation from there on even worse. It sort of mounted; the tension kept rising from that, and there was no conflict like any of these characters in this movie. I mean, there was just nothing to make me feel much of anything about any of them.
The first one's almost more of an interpersonal drama with the backdrop of some hints of horror, whereas this one is definitely like, this is a horror movie. There's the scary monster, you know.
There's the jump scare. There's the jump
right,
scare.
Right, yeah. There's the jump scare. There's the jump scare.
There's
you know.
A gross-out scene. There's one gross-out scene. A couple gross-out scenes, but one with the with the foot and all that kind of stuff. The foot was really sick. But it was like, this doesn't feel like it almost feels like they made this movie first and then decided, no, let's make this Blair Witch.
But yeah, I've got a found footage lost in the woods, and they went, oh, a Blair Witch sequel?
I wonder if this is always the intent to make it Blair Witch. You think it was?
I could see it not being, because there's some pieces in it that are really interesting that seem to get shoved to the side for the Blair Witch story,
mm-hmm.
like the time disturbance or difference thing. That was such a cool plot point that wasn't executed well enough. And I thought that was really cool. Or like the thing under the you're saying the gross out with the foot. That, you know, it all was like,
it didn't feel like it came from Blair Witch stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know if they, you know, we'll probably never know, but there's cool aspects in there that seem to lose their coolness because it's trying to fit into the Blair Witch mold.
Yeah. And I would totally agree with you. And like you said, there are some interesting moments. The time disturbance thing was one, but like you said, it was pretty much wasted. And I don't remember what it was. I don't remember what it was now. I just had a brain fart. But there were a couple things that really were. Oh, the tunnel scene was great. But this was very disappointing. And, you know, it doesn't feel like the kind of creative movie we expect Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett. We just don't expect this out of them. We talked about the marketing earlier and how they were able to keep a secret. Even that's not creative because we just saw them do the same thing with 10 Cloverfield Lane. So
it's very, I want to give that the filmmaker the benefit of the doubt that like, you got to be like this, this, and this, because it's very on them from what we know of their past.
It's clearly a studio mandated effort, I think, where they're probably hamstrung a little bit.
Right. But, and I will say, you know, we're kind of beating up on it. I will say within that context, there are things that they made work well, especially the end, as I was saying. I'd rewatch the last, what was it, 15 minutes or so again, because that part is scary. Oh, yeah.
I agree. I'll say the last 15, 20 minutes or so are really, really good. And like I said, indicative of what we would have expected from Wingard's movie. But I agree with you there. All right, so that was Blair Witch. Neither one of us was really enamored with it. I don't think either one of us hate it. It's just kind of, I don't know, middle of the road is what I would call it.
Middle of the woods.
Talk about. Oh.
Yeah, I'm all about the pun.
We're going to talk about Tom Hanks's Oscar chances in Selma.
Get it on, I can't watch the spot get blown. I see the sick lunatic with the devil is home. From the mist of the darkness, I come with this. Hitting straight to the chest like a primacy myth. Best director, the fanatical sight. I'm like a bat in the night when it's time to take flight. Here I am in the flesh, and yes, I love death. I'm obsessed. intellectual killer, special, majestic. Open up the devils, have them hanging for my testicle. Nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is Cactus 1549. Hit birds. We've lost thrust on both engines. We are turning back towards the LaGuardia.
Which engine did you lose?
Both engines.
Ignition. Thrust levers. Confirm. Idle.
Cactus
1549, if we can get a few, do you want to try to land runway 13?
We are unable. We may end up in the Hudson.
It's going to be left traffic, runway 31.
Unable.
Okay, what do you need to land?
No relight after 30 seconds on your master 1 and 2. Confirm off.
Too low,
off.
Terrain. Too low, terrain. Too low, terrain. Too low, terrain.
This is the captain. Brace for impact.
Oh, that was the words nobody wants to hear when you're flying on a plane. Brace for impact. that was a clip from Sully.
I didn't realize, like, that was the only thing he said. Like, it was, like, yeah. Nothing for the passengers, and then he just went, brace for impact. Like, that's all they heard. I was like, that's kind of a dick move, Sully, but...
Well, you know, when you're trying to pilot a plane like that in a situation like that, I don't think you have time for social niceties. I don't know what else you can do.
Hi, everyone. We may hit the water. I'm going to let you know in about a minute.
make the co-pilot do that menial task. I mean, go back there and tell those people to brace for impact. Eastwood, starring Tom Hanks, Aaron Eckhart, Laura Linney is in as well, although she doesn't get that much of a role. And this is the story of Chesley Sully Sullenberger, the pilot who landed the plane in the middle of the Hudson River a few years ago and became a national hero. But this movie isn't really about the landing of the plane. It's about everything that happened to him afterwards. And most people may not know that story. Sully was really raked across the coals over this. By the National Transportation Safety Board over his decisions during those, was it 200 seconds between the time that the birds struck the plane and the time that he landed in the Hudson, where the NTSB basically nitpicked his every move because of insurance. This is all about money, which is how these things tend to go. But in reality, in reality, there was a lot more to it than that. Sully was an outspoken advocate for pilots' rights, tighter safety regulations, higher pay, and this made him an enemy, which I think had a lot to do with why he was treated this way. The movie doesn't go into all that; it just focuses on the hearings, and really his inability to come to grips with being a hero. One of the best things about the movie to me is how they should sort of the dichotomy of it. They show the people on the street worshiping him basically his every move. You know, New York City basically owns New York City for a while there, it seems like. His private life, you know, he's having his every move questioned so that he cannot feel like a hero. And I think in terms of that, Hanks does a fantastic job of capturing that aspect within something. What did you think of the film, Matt?
I really liked it. I thought Eastwood and Hanks did a fantastic job. I don't think the NTSB is quite as evil as the film portrays them to be.
Of course not. Of course not.
Yeah. But
the character played by Michael O'Malley was such a dick. Was such an obvious dick. You know, during the movie.
Yeah.
It was like, come on, really.
Yeah, but the head of the NTSB is just an evil guy. Like, excellent. It was basically Mr. Burns.
Yeah, I know.
But that being said, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was it's this 208 seconds that sort of captured America, but story-wise, it's 208 seconds, and I think of action, and I think Eastwood did just a fantastic job of turning that into a full film about a person. You know, mm-hmm. it's really easy to tell the story of an action hero, but it's more difficult to tell the story of a man who everyone sees as not an action hero, but a hero. and yeah. Eastwood does a fantastic job with that. I especially liked the retelling of the landing from multiple perspectives. Yeah. You know, you're just over 2 minutes of story there, and so what do? You show how it impacts everyone over and over. You know, there's moments where there's New Yorkers looking at another plane coming down. There's moments where you're in with the passengers. There's the opening scene is if everything had gone wrong. You know, it's a nightmare that Sully's having. It was really, really impactful, and probably the only way you could tell that story without sort of making it a big action overblown melodrama.
One of the things that I was surprised by, and I don't know why I'm surprised by it, is you talked about the actual landing, how well those were shot, how impressive those were from a visual effects standpoint. You don't think of Clint Eastwood as a guy who's big, but when I was writing my review, I recalled the movie Hereafter from a few years ago. Do you remember that movie?
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. Not vividly, but
I know it wasn't that good of a movie. But the opening tidal wave scene was incredible. And
yeah.
I was like,
no, that's true.
I was like, we talked about Clint today, but actually does have some skill when he wants to employ it. You know, in terms of like you know, visual handling visual effects. He doesn't do it often, but when he breaks out, he can be really impressive.
Yeah. Well, and you know what they say, the best visual effects are the ones you don't notice. You know, and right. I'm sure if you went back through Eastwood's films, you'd be like, and actually broke them down, you'd be like, oh man, he's a great director. He can do this action stuff. He can do visual effects. He's just got an amazing touch with making movies.
Yeah, he does. And it's amazing how economical he is in terms of production and in terms of economy of story. This movie's only 96 minutes long. You know, by contrast, The Magnificent Seven is like 2 hours and 13 minutes long. And you're like, this should be reversed, I think.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> but it's true. He's like, he's able to cram a lot of story into a neat, neat. What do you think of Tom Hanks? Because you know, I've heard sort of the reviews have been good for the movie, but not glowing. But most people seem to have high praise for his performance. What do you think about his chances as a possible Oscar contender?
I can easily see him getting a nomination for this. I don't know if it's enough to win.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's Tom Hanks, and it's Tom Hanks doing a real life story, and it's Tom Hanks doing a real life story of a hero who saved lives, and it's directed by Clint Eastwood. That's an Oscar nom. That's just
right.
Like if I was to write down how to get an Oscar nom, that would be one of it, the other one being a period piece. So I think that's coming. I think that's going to come, even though it's got a pretty early release. I was a little surprised they didn't delay the release to closer to award season, especially after watching it and liking it a lot. But I think it'll get enough legs, and I think they'll push it hard enough that he'll at least get a nomination. Because
I figure if he could get nominated for Captain Phillips, he can get nominated for this.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's not a big rah-rah powerful role, but it's a very reserved and yet strong performance. I don't know. He keeps everything, you know, on that second layer incredibly well. And it comes through without being overwhelming, which is, you know, if you've seen Sully in any, the actual Captain Sully in any of the interviews, that's what the man's like, right? There's this very controlled nature about him, and that, you know, that's what helped him land the plane.
Yeah, the movie is as tightly wound as its subject, and I think that goes to say a lot for not only the performance, but also so that was Sully. All right, well, this has been fantastic, Matt. We need to do. I need to have you on the show more often. I always think the last thing is my fault. So I need to have you on the show more often.
I'm happy to come on. It's always a blast.
Did you hear the news about what the centerpiece of your middle book is going to be there?
Sorry, the centerpiece about what?
The centerpiece movie at the Middleburg Film Festival. Did you feel, see
what the, I did not. What I think I saw the email, but I didn't check it out yet.
Yeah, it's La La Land with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. So I imagine there's going to be a lot more critics coming to the festival this year. Just which is going to make it very difficult for people to get. So I'm
I have never been to the Middleburg Film Festival. I plan to go now.
I knew that was going to be the case. This is its fourth year. I've been there since the beginning, and I feel like I'm a part of the festival at this point. I always think of Sheila when I'm there. But this is a huge film for them to get. I've known about it for a while, but couldn't say anything, and it was finally released today. So I'm back and talk about it. But that is the big news. Locally, that is the big movie news. So I am really excited for that, and I can't wait till they announce the rest of the movies. Some are pretty big. But very good stuff. Good stuff. Matt, tell everybody where you can find your stuff at.
Yeah, you can check me out on Flixus.com. You know, weekly reviews, news, stupid jokes, things like that.
All right.
So, thanks for having me on, man.
All right, my man. We'll do this again very, very soon. I appreciate you coming on.
Cool. Talk to you later.
All right, man. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. That was Matt Razak of Flixus.com. We'll take a break, and we're going to come back and wrap up the show. We're going to talk about some bits of news, talk about the Predator reboot. I just dropped the Middleburg local bombshell. The next movie, we'll talk about Blu-rays and DVDs, then we'll get out of here. It's football coming on this Thursday night, man. All right. So we'll be right back. I misedited that. I think I probably did. Well, that's my fault. I'll fix it for next time because I love that track by Black Moon. The classic I Gotcha open. Editing with the quickness. Let's talk about what's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. And of course, the top movie is Captain America Civil War. But pretty much everybody who's out there has already pre-ordered this. It is Marvel's best, pitting Iron Man versus Captain America in a war of ideology and fists and superpowers and Spider-Man. Yes, Tom Holland's Spider-Man debuts in this movie. You also get Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther. This is basically about the teams fighting over a superhuman Restoration Act sort of thing. The Sokovia Accords, which demands superheroes register with the government and so forth. You really punching Captain America. Yeah, that's all that matters. Like I said, I think this is Marvel's best movie. I can't wait to watch it again and again. I think I'm due for another Marvel Universe run, where I just watch all the movies concurrently. I've done it a couple times before, and I think it's time I do it again. And this seems like a good time to do it. Before Doctor Strange arrives in November. Also coming out this week on Blu-ray is The Conjuring 2, the sequel to James Wan's hit horror. If you go to punchdrunkcritics.com right now, I put up the trailer for Annabelle 2. You might remember Annabelle was the spinoff from The Conjuring, centering on the creepy doll that was locked away in their basement. The Conjuring 2 is a sequel that is sort of like a European Amityville thing. It's also based on a true story. Not as effective as the first one, in my opinion. Still worth checking out if you're a fan of Wan's brand of horror. And it also has inspired a spinoff of a demonic nun character that's in the movie. So this is a whole franchise for James Wan. He may have Aquaman coming up, but he's got this whole horror franchise thing down. Remember, he's also got, Sinister or Insidious? Or is it both? I don't remember. It doesn't matter. They're all the same. Transformers the movie. Oh, my God. The 1986 animated movie of Transformers is, I think, one of my favorite movies of all time. And now it's finally out on Blu-ray, and I haven't pre-ordered it yet. I'm lacking, so I've got to get on that. If you're a Transformers fan, you've probably already seen this, and you probably already ordered it on Blu-ray. I mean, come on. How could you not? And pop star Never Stopping, The Violence, hilarious mockumentary about a rapper whose career falls off. I thought this movie was great, and nobody was, because they had terrific reviews. It's so funny, and I don't like Andy Samberg. I don't really care about Lonely Island, but this movie was great, and the fact that nobody saw it kind of makes me angry. So if you're looking to this now, you should go and check it out. And if you're looking to buy any of these, go to punchdrunkcritics.com and click on the shop button. And pick them up from our store, powered by Amazon.com. So you get all of their features, the Amazon Prime, free shipping, etc., and all their prices. And it's no additional cost to you. Our shop really help us keep the lights on. You know, that means PunchDrunkCritics.com as well as Cinema Royale. So what I suggest is that you go to the shop and bookmark all your DVD, Blu-ray, all your Amazon shopping from there. It will be a big help to us, and I would greatly appreciate it. We all would. So if you do that, that would be great. But some news. There's a few things I want to run by you real fast. I think are interesting. There's an action movie coming out, which that doesn't sound like much of anything, but it's an action movie set in the 70s, centering on Stan Lee. Yeah, that Stan Lee. The Stan Lee from Marvel Comics. It is a 1970s set action movie based on the life of Stan Lee. It was picked up by 20th Century Fox. And basically, what I can tell from it is that it's going to be sort of like Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which, if you remember that movie, it was Sam Rockwell as Chuck Barrett does of the Gong Show, as you know, he becomes a spy and falls into the world of espionage. Now, Chuck Barrett those sort of claims in real life often, that he was actually a spy and so forth and so forth, and nobody really believed him. And that's kind of where Confessions of a Dangerous Mind spins off of. It's one of my favorite movies too. Sammy has made no such claims of being a spy or anything like that. So I don't know why they're making it an action-adventure movie set in the 70s about his life. During that time period, he was fighting for Marvel. He was now sort of more of a figurehead than anything else. He was out in Hollywood trying to get Marvel's characters into movies and TV. And if we could be told, he's fucking terrified. He was not good, because those Marvel movies and anything they did at that time was not good. So he was not that great at that job. But it does have the cool Hollywood set of celebrities that he was rubbing shoulders with. And I imagine that will be the layout for the movie as well. I don't know why they're doing this. I just think it's kind of fascinating. That's all I can say. It's kind of fascinating that they're doing it. So I want to see where this goes, who they get to direct it, and so forth. And who they get to play Stan Lee. The only person I can imagine, Bryan Cranston. Other news, Jurassic World 2 has been confirmed to be part of a trilogy. This comes straight from the mouth of director Jay Bona, who directed The Impossible and has his new movie, A Monster Calls, coming out. He revealed that the movie, which is still developing with the previous director, Colin Trevorrow, who's now working on the story. He's busy with Star Wars Episode 9. He's still sticking around for Jurassic World 2 in a story and producing standpoint. But he revealed that it is part of a trilogy, which is probably news that everybody already knows. I mean, this is not surprising to anyone. I'll stop here while you pull yourself up off the fainting couch to learn that Jurassic World 2 is part of a trilogy. Of course it is. And it may not even be just a trilogy. It'd probably be more than that. Assuming they keep making money like the first one did, there's no reason why they would ever stop. Benicio del Toro is the lead role. Shane Black's Predator sequel. Now, I'm sick to death of everybody calling it a Predator reboot or remake, because it's not. Shane Black has said multiple times that it's not either of those. It's a sequel. The classic 80s movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and directed by John McTiernan that had Black in a role. Remember, he came to that production, worked the story a little bit, and convinced them to let him into the movie. And he had a small role. He got killed in the movie. He was one of the soldiers. So he's very familiar with material. Now, casting Del Toro means, obviously, this isn't going to be your straight-up action movie. There's going to be some other stuff involved. The way I imagine it is probably similar to Robert Rodriguez's Predators, which had Adrian Brody in the lead role. Not Schwarzenegger-esque at all. And I don't think of Schwarzenegger and I think of Del Toro either. But having Del Toro in the lead role is obviously a good start for a movie that I am really, really eager for. I'm a big fan of Shane Black. I love the Predator franchise. I'm dying for this. I cannot wait. We now know when the villain Mr. Sinister will be appearing next. Seen him since the closing credits of X-Men Apocalypse, and that was during the closing credits, which we didn't see. I mean, it's not a big deal, so it's not as if I'm spoiling anything, but basically it takes place in the Weapon X facility, which Wolverine has just broken out of and sliced up everybody dead. A bunch of men dressed up in suits are going through the facility. One of them finds a vial that is of Wolverine's blood and puts it in a suitcase marked Essex Corporation. Essex is the surname of Mr. Sinister, Nathaniel Essex, who is one of the X-Men's best villains. He's one of my favorite X-Men villains. He's a geneticist and a scientist. He's obsessed with the genetic potential of all mutant kind. And he's particularly obsessed with the Summers clan, like Cyclops and Havoc, Cable, and even Jean Grey. He created the Madeline Pryor clone of Jean Grey, who went on to become the Goblin Queen. Yeah, it's a whole long story. He's also very closely tied to Gambit, who was rumored to be the first at one point until Marvel dropped that storyline. He's just got ties everywhere. He's tied into Apocalypse. I mean, just everything. So Mr. Sinister is a badass villain, but it looks like he's going to be appearing next in the Wolverine 3, not in the traditional X-Men movie. This was confirmed on the commentary for X-Men Apocalypse by Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg, who say that the teaser was a setup for Wolverine 3, which is directed by James Mangold, and will be the final appearance of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Now, Sinister's arrival in that film likely means that we're going to see some cloning going on. There have been rumors that we might see X-23, which is the female genetic clone of Wolverine. People call her his daughter. I mean, it's just because it's kind of shorthand for what she really is. We could see Sinister's appearance be a lead to her debut. And that would make a lot of sense. If we're not going to see Wolverine anymore, then we need to have somebody with claws and a healing factor, right? So that's probably what's going to happen there. As for who's playing Sinister, we don't know. But my best guess is Richard E. Grant, who was signed to play the mad scientist of the film. Richard E. Grant is a pretty decent actor, pretty well-known actor. And I could see him as Mr. Sinister easy, or at least the human form of Sinister, the disguised form of Sinister. At least that's what I think. But Sinister is very rarely the main guy. There's usually somebody else involved. I'll probably see, his henchmen. So we'll see. But the Wolverine 3 comes out in March 2017, so we still got some time to learn more about what's going on there. Things that caught my eye this week news-wise. But for more, you can always go to punchdrunkcritics.com where I slave over the news that catches my attention every single day. And you can check out all of my reviews as well as the reviews from my fellow Punch Drunk critics, Julian Lytle, May Abdelbaki, Roxanne Haddadi, John Armstrong. All of us put in a lot of work to make the site go and to make the site as popular as it's become. And I thank a lot of a Cinema Royale audience for helping make that happen. And just critics, we did Cinema Royale a hit. So thank you guys for that. You guys keep me involved, keep me motivated to do this. And I need to start doing this show more often, but things have been a little bit crazy lately. And I appreciate that. But please continue listening to the show and continue checking out punchdrunkcritics.com. Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. And that's about it for the show. You hear the music. Thanks for tuning in to join me. I want to say thank you as well to Matt Razak of Flixes.com for coming in to talk about Blair Witch and Sully. Next show, The Magnificent Seven with Denzel Washington and Chris Pratt. And who else is in that? Peter Sarsgaard, Ethan Hawke, the lovely Haley Bennett. Of course, it's a classic Western. So we'll be talking about that. And keep an eye out for my interview with Lupita Nyong'o about her new movie, Queen of Kai, but who becomes a chess champion. It's based on a true story. I had a chance to talk to Lupita just yesterday, and that interview will be up soon. So look for that here on Cinema Royale. You can find it everywhere on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and of course, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. I will talk to you later. Goodbye.